tips for slowing down in the wilds of the Sahara Desert in North Africa, and the emerging coastal resorts of the Balkans. That's in just a bit on today's Travel with Rick Steves. Right now, James Patterson teamed up with Vanity Fair editor Mark Seal to profile the people who make Las Vegas, Nevada work as the ultimate fantasy destination. Their book is What Really Happens in Vegas. So James, when we're thinking about Vegas, you mentioned they're making it a little more family-oriented and so on, and certainly people go there for more than just the gambling. And the entertainment, I mean, it's amazing, fabulous entertainment there.
Yeah, you have your various levels of Cirque du Soleil. There's Circus four Circus or five of those different. And they're all, they're similar in terms of them being acrobatics that you've never, it's wonderful. And I think it is a family entertainment, those things. Right. And those are great. And then the various entertainers, which range from Celine Dion to some people maybe you don't necessarily want to see.
Well, think of the names that have really made it because of Vegas. I mean, as soon as you leave the airport, you're on Wayne Newton Boulevard, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. I think Wayne is still, to my knowledge, I think he's still kicking.
But he's like
still
resident singing, entertainer for decades. And wrote about how Elvis was earning $1 million a month back in the 70s. That was pretty impressive in the 70s.
It's still decent money, whatever. Yeah.
And the Rat Pack is so famous there.
Yeah. Actually, there was a funny story, but I like to golf, and this is way back, but somebody ran into Sammy Davis Jr., and he was coming off the course, and they said, "Sammy, how'd you do out there?" And he said, "Oh, I had an 83, and then the guy saw the pro a little later, and he said, "Sammy must be pretty good. It's a pretty tough course." And the pro said, "No, Sammy plays till he gets to 83, and then he comes in." So he shoots 83 pretty much every day.
Oh, there you go. Well, another dimension of the city, which I find interesting, is magic. You always hear people talking about magic shows in Vegas, and it's kind of surprising to me. What do you think it is about magic in a gambling capital?
Well, the whole town is about magic.
It really is, isn't it?
It's about smoke and mirrors and making you believe things that you probably shouldn't believe. And the town is also very visual. Everything about it. I mean, even the buildings and the billboards, you know, and the desert as the background. But, you know, magic is very visual. And I think people are in the mood for it when they go out there.
And there's a dimension that you focused on in the book that I thought was interesting in What Really Happens in Vegas. There's this idea of death-defying stunts. The free fall is a big deal.
Oh, my God, the Strat. There's no way that I would ever. I'm too old to
do that.
Kind
I was
of
wondering.
Thing.
No.
No. But this, I'm not big on heights.
This sky jump, what is it, 1,100 feet? And it's just plummeting.
I don't get the attraction of that, but I guess people love that adrenaline thing and death-defying when you know pretty much you're probably not going to crash to the pavement.
Well, Evel Knievel was a big deal in Vegas.
He was built for Vegas.
So this is risk. It's part of risk. It's part of that adrenaline. It's part of that fantasy. It probably gets people stoked up to step into that casino and go for broke.
Yeah. Well, that's the risk thing, too. I mean, I used to like my thing on gambling. If I was going to do anything, I'd put like $300 or $400 in my pocket and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's all I got. And for me, I'm just this wuss. But if I got up $150, I walk away.
Right.
And if I got down $125, I'd probably walk away too. But you'll watch people at these tables, and they're betting, you know, $200, $300, $400, $500 a hand and whatever. Yeah. And you look at them and you go, these people clearly don't have big money.
No.
But apparently they'll come there and they'll have $5,000, $10,000 or whatever, and they're willing to lose it, which is stunning to me.
Well, that's the whole lost wages thing.
Yeah.
Going to lost wages.
That's kind of sad. You know, the other thing that's a little sad about the place is the casinos, there are a lot of things in there which are kind of upbeat and fun and whatever. Casinos are not one of them.
No.
They're quiet. The people don't, craps tables are fun.
Yeah.
But most of it, people, they look dejected, and you know they always seem like they're like one step away from like, I don't know if I want to be on the earth anymore.
Well, to me, I get in a very interesting, not a funk, but a thought-provoking mood where I'm looking at people and wondering what is their story. Here's a person that's sitting alone at a slot machine all day long. They don't have a lot of money, and they're spending a lot of money. And there's something going on there, James.
I agree. I agree. I do find it, part of it is exhilarating and part of it is depressing. You know,
there's a soundtrack. When you walk through a casino, there's a soundtrack, a white noise of desperation or a white noise.
And you'll hear those bells. You hear those bells, which are suggesting that people are winning a lot of money.
That's right.
Ding, 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 ding.
It stokes you. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with James Patterson, and his book is he's got countless books, but the book we're featuring today is What Really Happens in Vegas.
What Really Happens in Vegas. I'm not a huge Vegas person, but, you know, in rereading the book, it's almost like, oh, I want to go there again, you know?
Yeah, and one thing about travel for me is the people you meet. I mean, meeting people carbonates the experience, and to me, that's the mark of a good trip. And you can meet people anywhere you go, and with your book, you really, I think, enlivened the whole culture of Vegas by showcasing or shining a light on some quirky individuals. I mean, Charlotte Richards, she's like deep into her 80s, and didn't she innovate or invent the drive-in wedding?
Yes.
Tell us about her.
No, that chapter is fun. She had an idea. She threw her whole, threw everything that she had into it, and she let her imagination go wild. And just with that spirit of, what do you want? How do you want to get married? Well, how do you want it to work? Here we have a lot of ideas for you. And you always hear these stories about people, and she had a bunch of them, about just people go out there not planning to get married.
Right.
And the next thing they knew, they were married, you know. And they make it easy out there, so it's a dangerous place.
And she really believed she found her niche, and she was contributing and making people happy, and she was the wedding queen of the West.
Well, they certainly were happy when they were getting married. I don't know what the next days
would have been
like. When they
sobered up, what was the thinking? You know, James, one time I was giving a lecture at the University of Vegas, and a professor gave me a tour of the city, reminding me there's real people off the strip, and it's a normal city. And it was
fascinating. Well, it's not a normal city. Let's not kid ourselves.
It's a city. It's a city.
There are people outside of the city.
Yeah. It was a fascinating kind of social commentary on the role that Vegas provides to our society. And it was really a very fascinating experience to be with him. What are some takeaways that you have on why is there Vegas and why is it so popular? And what does it say about humanity?
Well, I obviously, you know, have an imagination and love to create things that haven't been created before, hopefully, or tell stories that haven't been told and tell them in a way that are stimulating. And it ranges from the novels to some of the nonfiction. And with the nonfiction, what I've always tried to do is at the end of it, people would go, I understand something better that I didn't understand before. Yeah. You know, I do a series with Matt Eversman, Matt was the actual sergeant who was portrayed in the movie Black Hawk Down.
Uh-huh.
He's a great interviewer. And so we did one, Walk in My Combat Boots. And our mission was, if you have been in combat, you would say Eversman and Patterson got it right. And if you're one of these people that likes to BS about things that you don't really understand, you would say, I didn't really understand the military till I read that book.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with this, with my autobiography, it's the same thing. People would have certain assumptions about who I am, whatever. Well, they're wrong. It's not what it is. And my autobiography is just story after story after story. It's not the usual kind of thing. Well, let's talk about Newburgh, New York.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You know. And same with the Vegas book.
Yeah.
It's getting into this thing and you understand something, I think in an entertaining way, that you didn't understand before. And you go, okay, well, that, you know, I hadn't really thought about that, even if you've been there a few times. I think even people who've been there half a dozen times would go, I'm surprised by this book.
No, you read your book and you have a much better understanding of the workings of Vegas in so many ways because it's such a multidimensional experience and city. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with, I think, the most popular storyteller of our time. That's a fair thing to say, James Patterson. He sold over 200 million books, and he's the creator of unforgettable characters and series, including Alex Cross, Women's Murder Club, Jane Effin Smith, and Maximum Ride. He's written about the Kennedys, John Lennon, and Princess Diana, and he's co-authored number one best-selling novels with Bill Clinton and Dolly Parton and told the story of his own life in James Patterson by James Patterson. But you know, I would imagine he's a traveler as well as a prolific writer. James, we know about James Patterson, the writer, but what about the traveler? Do you like to travel?
Sometimes. Yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of time going around the world. There's not a lot of places that I haven't been. I spent a couple of weeks in Kenya, and I loved that. Was actually one of my favorite trips. I loved that trip.
You know, I would imagine, as prolific as you are, you must always be kind of scouting, working, taking notes. Do you get inspiration in your travels?
Yeah, my stupid imagination is so big that I don't need it, but yeah, sure.
You know, there must be interesting characters you run into.
Well, I'll give you, this isn't an interesting character thing as much as just in terms of my crazy imagination. I was touring with Mike Lupica, who's a famous sports writer, and we've done a couple of books together now. So we went on a book tour, and we were down on the Jersey Shore, and it was, and my wife was there with us, and it was a miserable day. It was raining and wind and da-da-da-da. And they said, well, let's walk from this little hotel, and we'll walk down to the over to the beach. So we're walking, and I get about 50 yards, and I said, screw this. It's awful out here. I'm just going to go back. And I'm walking back to this little hotel we're staying at, and this little guy, little older guy, is riding on a bicycle. And one word went into my head, just watching this little guy. And I went inside, and I wrote a 5-page outline for a novel just based on this little guy, and it just, boom, and off I was. And, you know, I now have an outline that's 100 chapters just from that little goofy thing. So, you know, I could sit there and listen to the show and think about travel and do something, you know, kind of, yeah, based on your life, you know, whatever. So, you know, that's the kind of fascination I had about stuff. In terms of going, you know, around the world, and you obviously like other people more than I do, but I like some of them. When we went to Africa, it was, you know, one of these things where they would put you on a little, you know, maybe four or six people in a van. It was pretty safe, but yeah, it was fascinating.
Yeah.
And you'd go and, you know, okay, well, here are the giraffes and the elephants and whatever. And the wild dogs are the scariest thing there. They're just so vicious. The dogs are straight up from hell. But in the bus, we made two really great friends. And it turned out their real work was they worked for a very wealthy couple, and they basically took care of the yacht. And one of them was the captain, and one was the chef. Every year we would go and see them because they would have a little downtime, and so we would stay on the yacht with them when the owners weren't away.
Right.
You know, so you do meet people that are, you know, kind of fun and interesting and whatever. Yeah.
But James, when you think about getting out of cultures, what is your, yeah, take on culture shock? Is that something you're attracted to, or is that something you try to avoid?
I would say I'm interested in it, and then it's a question of how much work is it to really get into it. You know, as I said, I love Kenya. I love that trip because they're just, you know, you go from the teeming big city thing, which are like nothing that I had experienced,
right,
before. And I ran into the same thing a little bit in Bangkok, just in terms of just monster, unbelievably noisy, just, yeah, activity, just overwhelming.
But aren't you drawn into that to go just like, this is a river of humanity that I've never paddled down?
Well, yeah, and you're not to drawn into, I'm there. I don't have to be drawn into it. I'm in it. I'm part of the river. I'm in the river, man. Yeah, and it does, and I, you know, I have written, I actually wrote an Alice Cross book set in Africa, probably because of that trip. It wasn't in Kenya, but I was more curious about Africa than I had been.
You got to get out of your comfort zone.
Well, you don't necessarily have to get out, but you have to figure out a way. It depends on the person.
Right.
Some people need to get out of their comfort zone. Some people just need a way to stay comfortable. But we talked a little bit before about the notion of somebody to guide, maybe somebody. That's how I went,
right,
in Hong Kong. I happened to have friends there. So they took us around for about 4 days, which was spectacular.
You know, it seems like when you've had friends, when you've had locals to give you an inside track, you get double the experience rather than just being,
yeah,
overwhelmed.
Oh, at least double it. Yes, exactly.
So that's a really important thing. The extravagance of Las Vegas may make it the most uniquely American tourist destination of them all. It's the setting for James Patterson's true stories behind the mirage in What Really Happens in Vegas. His website is jamespatterson.com. Have you ever considered how in the old days people used to say bon voyage and now they say have a safe trip?
You know, that's interesting.
You know, what do you think's with that?
oh, we're just running scared here. We're unfortunately, and some of it is it makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever had, or at least been a conscious time when there's so many things that actually are relatively scary, whether you believe or don't believe in global warming. I do believe in it, but
right. That's
a major, significant, really frightening thing. The state of the world, you know, we're in a period right now where there are wars again. Things that happen in some of the bigger cities, the robberies, and, you know, they're up and violence is up. So, yeah, I think it does affect us. And the fact that people will sit there and watch the news all day, which to me is toxic. But half an hour within reason is plenty to catch up. Now,
yeah. There
may be things you want to read a lot about a certain situation
right. Or
whatever, and that's certainly up to you. But at any rate, I think, you know, in Bon Voyage versus Have a Safe Trip, I mean, certainly the actual trips are safer than they were. I mean, the planes, those things are safer than they were. So, you know, one of the things, you can have this for free, Rick, but I think there's an opportunity for people to do videos, just our videos, where you could really give people a sense of, okay, here's some of the stuff very quickly that you're going to see in Paris. Here's some of the stuff. And we really give you a real feeling where you go like, yeah, you know, I'd like to go there. You know what I mean?
You know, I'd like to do that. You could help me, maybe.
I will help you, but I give it to you,
okay,
and you can maybe give me a piece when you're a billionaire. But, you know, oh, yeah, Jim told me that. Here's $100 for you, Jim.
You know, Jim, you are clearly the most prolific writer I've ever had the opportunity to have on the show, and I've never thought of you as a travel...
Talk about the quality of my prose, will you please?
I've never thought of you as a travel writer, but I've got your book, What Really Happens in Vegas, and to me, that could be a guidebook to Vegas, you know? It's just, you've taken one city and uncovered surprising dimensions to that city. In a way, I think that kind of information, you were talking about having an insider, having a guide, everywhere we travel... You know, there's more there than meets the eye.
Yeah. Yeah. If you read that book, you will never think about Vegas the same way again. Whether you're somebody that goes there all the time or somebody who rarely or has never gone there.
Well, then I'll give you a tip. You could write a book like your Las Vegas book to the world's 10 greatest cities and uncover the same unheralded dimensions.
Uh-huh.
That would really carbonate everybody's experience when they went there with your book in hand.
And Rick, if I do that, I'm going to send you $100.
And then I'll take that to Vegas and throw it away.
Perfect.
James Patterson, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a delight to talk with you. And thanks for all the creativity you bring to our world through your writing.
Oh, thank you. This is very stimulating. Really good. Dr. Shane, darling, Dr. Shane, thank you for seeing.
We'll take time to appreciate the starlight in the Sahara and even the embroidery at the Bay of Kotor. That's just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves.